Does it seem like every time you turn around or open up your wallet, you're shocked at the changes that have directly impacted your life in just 2.5 years? There's something that you can do to protect the value of your hard-earned savings and retirement accounts. Contact the folks at American Hartford Gold and talk to them about your options in diversifying your assets. Empower yourself with opportunity. Hold on to the fruits of your hard work and protect your future. So do what I did and call the only precious metal dealers I trust, American Hartford Gold. Diversify your portfolio with physical gold and silver delivered right to your door or inside of your IRA or 401k. American Hartford Gold is the highest rated firm in the country with an A+ rating from the Better Business Bureau and thousands of satisfied clients. Call today and they'll give you up to $5,000 of free silver on your first qualifying order. Call American Hartford Gold today at 866-887-1188. That's 866-887-1188 or text Dana to 998899. That's 866-887-1188 or text Dana to 998899.
We are imposing a complete siege on Gaza. There will be no electricity, no food, no water, no fuel. Everything will be closed. We are fighting against human animals and we are acting accordingly.
Just horrific. I mean, it's still, just when you think it can't get worse, it does. I mean, it's just horrific, all the stuff that we're still learning coming out of Israel. Due to this ongoing attack by Hamas. Oh man, not a good week. Welcome everybody to the program. Dana Lash here with you, starting your week off. The latest in, it looks like a ground invasion that they are preparing, because there are hostages, and the reservists have been called up. The border with Gaza has been sealed, and the ongoing video, we're starting to see some of the stuff that began now a few days ago, whether it's the attacks on, villages, smaller towns in some of these, territories. And then the ongoing attacks, the rocket attacks in Tel Aviv. I saw a video yesterday and it autoplayed, you know, on social media of Hamas shooting a family's dog in the head. They were beheading babies. That was confirmed, not just by several international news agencies, et cetera, because I'm so tired of some of the people on the right sitting here going, oh, this is Israeli propaganda. I mean, I get it that there are some people on the left that have joined the right, but you don't have to bring, you know, your anti-Semitism with you, honestly, at this point. I'm just done with it. I'm so done with it. These are very clarifying times, by the way. So some of the stuff that I've seen, we're starting to hear some of these survivor accounts. Just horrific stuff. It's horrific. I mean, there's no word for it. And, of course, the media malpractice and some of the just ridiculous reaction to all of it. But this is now, I think, finally, what the president's going to be speaking on this. Finally, how many days later, Kane? How many days later? He came out with the statement yesterday, hasn't said anything yet about this is going to be the first time he's remarked about the Americans that have been taken hostage, the Americans that have been killed. But Hamas has to be turned to salt. And I'm going to tell you, this is, for all the discussion about Gaza, Gaza elected Hamas. Can we be honest about what this is? Hamas chose to do this. Do you realize they don't even have a proper sewer system functioning in Gaza? They were given all of the resources, all of the materials, the funding, everything possible to fix infrastructure that was left behind for them when Israel unilaterally pulled out in 2005. And instead of investing all of the money that was sent to them for that purpose, guess what they did? They bought more damn rockets and they built more tunnels and they contributed to they established the Martyrs Fund. That's the big giant pot of money that pays out the suicide bombers' families. That's what they spent the money on. That's the kind of stuff that Hamas does because they're terrorists. They don't care about the people that live within their borders. They don't care. This is about control. They don't care about Israelis. They don't care about quote unquote Palestinians. They don't care about any of it. I mean, there is no way these are true and you need to be aware of it. There was one kibbutz that had been stormed and 40 babies were beheaded. babies. That's true. This is Nazi stuff. Well, they're Nazis. Hamas are Nazis. I mean, their charter literally repeats, you know, Hitler word for word. They're Nazis. They had 70 terrorists that stormed this. It's a smaller town in Israel, and they killed everyone that they saw. One of the videos showed, like I said, the dog getting shot because they killed everybody else. They killed everybody else, so then they shot the dog, and then they burned the houses down. Now, tell me, for an elected entity that says that they are trying to free, quote unquote, free Palestine, what is the purpose of setting your people up for such a response? This is the unfortunate aspect of war. I wrote about this last night, and I hope that you read the piece that went out yesterday, because it was titled What Israel Now Must Do. And I went into the story of the family. I told you about this yesterday that hid their 10-month-old twins. There was another family, a family of five. They rushed into their bunker during the Hamas airstrikes. And then their bunker was breached by Hamas. They dragged all of them out, including their toddlers, and killed all of them. Killed all of them. In one town, another kibbutz, the Hamas murdered 10%, which is literally like the Roman rule of decimation, which is one out of every 10 captives. 10% of the town was murdered. And as all of this was going, Hamas began threatening to execute hostages, including Americans, on live television, starting with Israeli soldiers. They were going to broadcast this. Do you know what the other thing that Hamas was doing that I read about? The brutality of their actions. They were taking the cell phones of their captives, and then they were recording them being murdered and tortured, and then uploading it to their social media accounts, whether it was Instagram, Facebook, TikTok, Twitter. However, there was a woman who, she got a call from her mom yesterday. She gave an interview, and I think it was BBC. She gave an interview, and she said her mother called and was hysterical. And she said, oh my gosh, look at Facebook. Oh my gosh. And the girl looked at Facebook, and it was her grandmother being murdered by Hamas. They uploaded the video, and it was up there for like a good like 20 minutes to half hour before Facebook took it down. I mean, anybody who makes excuses for Hamas or who tries to justify their terrorism with this both side stuff, you are incompatible with this world. That's the truth of it. Hamas and Hezbollah, they're friends to the north. They're terrorist organizations. They're a bunch of fat bastards who use innocent civilians as shields. They don't care about, quote unquote, Palestinians. They don't care about Israelis. They care only about control. That's why none of the aid ever goes to those people. They store rockets in apartment buildings. They store munitions in places of worship. And students sit in classrooms right above stockpiles of bombs. And Hamas engages in this performative grief theater when the people they tell not to evacuate are hurt by any retaliatory strikes. And yes, that's true. While the IDF were sending text and voice messages to residents of Gaza, warning them that they should leave because that area that is going to come under strike, the Gaza authorities, they were telling everyone, oh no, the IDF is just trying to incite fear. Stay where you are. Israel warns them to flee, and Gaza overlords literally tell them to stay put. So it is absolutely time to end Hamas. And the only reason, as I said yesterday, that Israel has not done it before is because they've shown an overabundance of mercy. The strikes that they carried out yesterday, last night, ongoing today, these are Hamas sites that the entire world has known about for forever. It's not like they're secret. And Israel always refrained because the world always portrays Israel as the aggressors. Always. Israel is the aggressor whenever they respond to what Hamas does. And it's, I mean, that's the narrative. You're seeing it now. I mean, I don't have to explain it to you. You see it in these headlines now. I gave some for you as an example last night. And you have Hamas that says that Israeli is targeting their citizens. Israeli doesn't target citizens. That's Hamas. It's Hamas. Now, I'm going to be really clear again. And I said this yesterday on air. Palestine is a made-up country. It is a made-up country. It is a made-up ethnicity that is not supported by 2,000 years of history. It's not supported by the Quran. It's not supported by the Bible. It is as much a made-up term as assault rifle is. And I said yesterday, and again, this is why you need to sign up for Substack, it was literally a name that was spitefully given by Hadrian, Roman Emperor, to the Jewish people after they quelled a Judean uprising, and they named them after the Philistines, who, by the way, were seafaring people and were Greek. They weren't Arab. And they were already and they were already gone from the area. They did that spitefully. They named the area after the Jewish, after Israel's enemy, so that they could, so that Hadrian could push this disassociation of Jewish people from this land. That is the whole reason that that name came into existence. There is no occupation. That is a myth. The fact that Palestine is a country is a myth. The fact that there is Palestinians is a myth. There are people of Arab descent, probably mostly from Egypt. I mean, Yasser Arafat was born in Egypt. He headed the PLO. He was Egyptian. And by the way, Egypt closed their border with Gaza. You know, they have really good relationship with Israel after the return of Sinai. They have very good relationship with Israel. They're none too pleased with the way that Hamas has been acting. And you know what? Again, Israel unilaterally withdrew in 2005. They've been sending so much aid. You know, they send aid regularly, clothing, food, medicine, every single year. They wouldn't have to if the elected body actually was a servant of the people there. And since the 30s, every single proposal for the quote-unquote two-state solution has been rejected by Palestine's leaders. Every ceasefire ever brokered, without exception, is always violated by Hamas. There is a difference between being peaceful and being harmless, because a country that refuses to defend its peaceful, its people, isn't peaceful, it's harmless. Choosing to live peacefully when you are capable of immense violence, that is what being peaceful is. I know war is awful. And as I said in my piece, that is why, God forbid, responses to terror like this should be so brutal and so violent and so unparalleled by modern comparison that it sows within the hearts and souls of all enemies a fear that is so deep that the reverberation carries with it a warning several generations into the future. Because such a response is necessary to avoid any kind of piecemeal forever wars. And it's necessary to keep this from spreading as well. And it's necessary to demonstrate that those who refuse to live in peace shall neither live on this earth. So I hope that they all get sent to hell along with all of the demon fighters that have been carrying this out. Hamas and Hezbollah. Israel's going to win this, and we need to just stand back and let them do it, because a lot of people in this country and a lot of people in our government and a lot of people around the world don't have the spine to do what it takes to protect the innocent. They've refrained long enough, and they have every right to respond however they see fit, and they don't have to ask permission. They don't have to make apology or anything else. This is what Hamas has chosen, and not just for itself, but for Israel. For 10 years, Patriot Mobile has been America's only Christian conservative wireless provider. And when I say only, trust me, they're the only one. Glenn and the team have been great supporters of the show, which is why I'm proud to partner with them. Patriot Mobile offers dependable nationwide coverage, giving you the ability to access all three major networks, which means you're getting the same coverage you've been accustomed to without funding the left. And when you switch to Patriot Mobile, you're sending the message that you support free speech and religious freedom. The sanctity of life, the Second Amendment, military veterans, and first responders. Their 100% U.S.-based customer service team makes switching easy. Keep your number, keep your phone, or upgrade. Their team will help you find the best plan for your needs. Just visit PatriotMobile.com/Dana or call 878-PATRIOT and get free activation when you use offer code Dana. Join me and make the switch today. That's PatriotMobile.com/Dana or call 878-PATRIOT.
It's time to look into the past. After the Yom Kippur War, we had an oil embargo with prices increasing over 300%. As we continue to push green energy policies, Biden has drained the Strategic Petroleum Reserve. What kind of danger have we put ourselves in? Check out the Watchdog on Wall Street podcast on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcast.
And now, all of the news you would probably miss. It's time for Dana's Quick Five.
Just in time for the Bidenomics speech, national debt has increased by another $500 billion in just 20 days. Great job, government. Keep spending. $33.5 trillion. That's what it hit on October 5th. The debt quietly blew past the $33 trillion mark. So I can't even imagine that kind of money. Can you? I can't even imagine how much that is. It's insane. So this is really interesting. Retired NBA all-star and American-Israeli citizen Amare Stoudemire is attacking. Well, he's not attacking. He's rightfully criticizing. Let's not use softy snowflake language. Pro-Palestinian, quote unquote, Palestinian politicians and BLM, because he says that they have been silent in the wake of all of these attacks. Audio soundbite 14. Listen to this awesomeness.
Woke up, man, this morning with some disturbing news out of Israel. The Hamas kidnapping children, putting them in cages, killing women, killing the elderly. That's some coward. That's cowardly. And for all y'all Black Lives Matter who ain't saying nothing, well, let me figure out exactly what happened before I say anything. Figure out what? It ain't never been cool to kidnap kids and put them in cages. It ain't never been cool to kill women and elderly. Never been, no matter where you from, what you represent, what tribe you for, don't matter. They ain't never been no cool. They ain't never been none that nobody supported. And then you go and hide and put the kids in front of you as a barricade. That's some coward. All you politicians who always have something to say on the contrary, I see you.
I love him.
All you Black Lives He's Matter awesome. People who always
have. I mean, he tells everyone to go where they need to go. Love it, love it. Also, North Dakota Governor Doug Burgum, he's called again. He said that the debate participation thresholds are clubhouse rules, and this nobody is now offering gift cards once again to try to meet the donor metric. He has no poll numbers to meet the other requirement. He's trying to pay everybody off with gift cards again so he can get himself on stage because it's about ego. I mean, what is the point? Get off the stage. Be done with it. We have a lot more coming up, including the immigration aspect and the house being frozen. Stay with us.
Black Rifle Coffee Company, together with the Boot Campaign, are on a mission to raise $1 million to change the lives of veterans. Now through the end of the year, when you grab a can of ready-to-drink coffee, you can help contribute to making this massive donation possible. The Boot Campaign is one of the most renowned veteran-focused nonprofits in the country, working tirelessly to provide life-changing aid and benefits to service members and their families. Black Rifle Ready-to-Drink Coffee is available in several great-tasting flavors at blackriflecoffee.com/Dana or at convenience stores nationwide. Whether it's the berry mocha, vanilla bomb, or espresso salted caramel, every can helps. Fuel your caffeine fix while making a huge difference in the lives of veterans and their families. Black Rifle Coffee Company is committed to serving the veteran community, and with your help, we can all continue to make a difference. Let's raise a can together and keep fueling Americans for a good cause. Visit blackriflecoffee.com/Dana. That's blackriflecoffee.com/Dana.
Tired of the same old predictable commentary? Spice up your day with a Dana Show podcast, where dynamic discussions, compelling guests, and Dana's unique perspective await. Download on Apple or wherever you get your podcasts.
It means that we are very clear that Israel not only has the right to defend itself, Israel has the duty to defend itself with overwhelming force, to defend itself in a way that Hamas terrorist infrastructure and networks are eradicated from the earth.
That's Florida Governor Ron DeSantis. Some of the media were getting really mad at him yesterday because he was pretty forceful with his language. I don't see the problem. Welcome back to the show. Dana Lashier with you. You can listen coast to coast. You can stream the radio program, watch the simulcast. Also, YouTube, Facebook, channel 347 as well on DirecTV. He's literally only been saying what obviously needs to be said. I'm not at all quite sure why anybody in the media has been upset over this. I mean, he said this too. This was audio soundbite 8. And this is all true. Listen.
So we are, sad at what's happened. I'm angry at what happened. I think that we need justice. And I think that justice needs to be so severe that they wouldn't think of doing this ever again. And,
you have to have people say the truth on this. And that's, that's ultimately, we got to stop being afraid to acknowledge what is. And this is why I'm saying, I'm not going to have my language policed by people who are going to be apologists for terrorists. Also, here's something you need to consider. Hamas is a terrorist organization, yes. And Hamas also does not care one iota for their people. And I've been seeing this over and over again, and I've retweeted some of it, how the way the media has gone, what Israel's talking about, or what Ron DeSantis said when he's talking about hitting back. You're calling for genocide. There are a lot of innocent people caught up in this. I want to be really clear about something. 20 years ago, even, has there been any confusion as to what Hamas has stood for? I mean, they're a very militant group. Or even what Fatah has called for. I mean, they're pretty much all, I think, all, at this point, kind of one and the same. But there was the Hamas faction beat Fatah. And this was back in, 2006. Fatah always led the Palestinian Authority in the West Bank, and Hamas always ruled Gaza. I mean, those were the territories that were divided by the politics, right? And this is important to understand that, because they've been at odds as well. And then when you've had, going through the years, starting, going back to 2006, going up to, even 2018, after you had 2011, the Arab uprising. And then there were demonstrations in those two territories, in West Bank and in Gaza. And people were mad at the animosity between Fatah and Hamas. And so then now you have Hamas that has been ultimately taking control. Celebrating election victory. They had Fatah used to be dominant, and now. Then they described, going back to 2006, it was described as a shock win, meaning that people voted for them. In fact, the Fatah leader, their officials conceded defeat, and the Palestinian prime minister and his cabinet submitted their resignations. Ahmed Kouira told the media, including the BBC, The Guardian, The Telegraph, Agence France-Presse, Reuters, quote, "This is the choice of the people. It should be respected." They were elected. People know who Hamas are. It's a terrorist organization. They were elected. And for everyone out there saying that, well, you can't have Israel can't carry out strikes. Ultimately that would end in genocide. That's what Hamas chose. Israel didn't choose that. And I absolutely reject the specious and illiberal reasoning that forces someone to say that a response to decades of bullying, decades of murder, of attacks, that the response is the aggression. We don't do that. The response is just that. It is the response. Hamas is the aggressor, and Hamas was elected. And elections, when you elect tyrants, and tyrants make bad choices, all of that has consequences. War isn't pretty. That's why nobody wants it. War is awful. It's brutal. The only people who fantasize about war are the people who have no touch, no exist, no relationship to it at all whatsoever. It is a horrible, awful thing. And you then drive into the world of geopolitical strategy, which is a realm without emotion, and it is all logic. And logic isn't pretty sometimes. And logic isn't friendly. And logic isn't concerned with consensus. And that's the situation that we're in now. And there are going to be some tough choices made. Some of those tough choices have already been made by Hamas. Because now they can't exist anymore. This has gone on for too long. Every ceasefire they've broken. Every ceasefire. And for instance, let me pull this up. They have never at any point sought to ever actually use the resources given to them to actually improve the lives of their people. Like, for instance, I was reading this piece about, well, it didn't ask this question, but it got right up to it as to why all the green people, you know, the greenies, why were they never mad at Hamas? Because they spent all of their resources on terror projects. Like, for instance, they never built a sewer system. They just have like an open sewer to the Mediterranean. Why did they never do that? I mean, I think that's a legitimate answer. I mean, they're using the Mediterranean as a literal sewer. They didn't actually build up the infrastructure for that after Israel unilaterally withdrew in 2005, just gave them everything that was left. Hamas didn't do anything to improve or build up on it. Why? I mean, they literally had to cancel swimming. They had to close their beaches because of the sewage problem. They spend literally all of their money on terror projects. They cannot even spend the money that is given to them to properly take care of the sewage for their area. In fact, earlier this month, the Zaikim Beach south of Ashkelon was banned because they have a sewage plant that just didn't work anymore and there was nothing put into it to make it work. They have sewage floating right into the seawater. They banned it again last year because they had 130,000 cubic meters of sewage discharged from Gaza. They took the sewage pipes. There's a piece in The Guardian. They talked about some of the sewage pipes. Like, for instance, there was a rocket that the Iron Dome didn't get. And when they landed and when the people went and retrieved it and were looking at it, it was like, in fact, it was described as a sewage pipe with wings. There's a couple of different pieces. There's a Guardian, BBC, Times of Israel. So they were literally taking the sewer pipes that they were supposed to be using. A lot of these were materials that had been sent to them. They were literally taking these materials and using them to make rockets to send back over to Israel. So you tell me that Hamas didn't choose this. This is insane. Just insane. I mean, this is what these, I don't know how you could even vote for people. I don't know how you could vote for Hamas knowing that this is the stuff that they do. And so all of the, well, you know, that's just, it's, you're engaging. It's A, it's not. And B, also, this has to end because this can't continue happening. How long has this been going on, Kane? How long?
A long time.
So this ongoing, now you have the strike group. Ship's going. Everything moving into gear, moving into position. We're going to cover all of that. We've got Days of these United States as well to get into.
Don't let FOMO get the best of you. Stay in the loop and ahead of the curve by following Dana on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Like sands through the hourglass, so are the days of the United States.
When we first launched the fund, there was some backlash that came with launching the fund. And I want to address and acknowledge that backlash right now. And here's what I have to say about that. I get it, and I completely understand. And I could have been better. And next time I will be better. And I understand, you know, money ain't falling out of the sky and it's not growing on trees. And there's a lot of people out there who's living paycheck to paycheck. And I get it, and I know what that's like. I've lived paycheck to paycheck. $7, I know. I know what that's like. And when you are living paycheck to paycheck, I don't want to speak for everybody, I'll speak for myself, but I feel it's connected. When you're living paycheck to paycheck, I was easily pissed off and I was frustrated. And the last thing you want to hear when you are living paycheck to paycheck is someone asking you for money, especially when the person asking you for money already has a lot of money. So I get it. I understand. I'd never launched a fund before, but I'm a quick study and lesson learned.
I'm trying to figure out the backlash just because it's Oprah. I kind of wonder if it was just because it was Oprah.
Well, yeah,
yeah, yeah. But is he as polarizing as she is? Because I don't think he's been as political. I mean, I think he's got his own political douchery. But that's The Rock, who, by the way, was talking about. He set up this Maui fund with Oprah. I mean, Maui fell out of the news. Good heavens. The Democrats really wanted it to fall out of the news. But they set up this fund and they were talking about, you know, I'm telling you, some of the GoFundMes are weird. Right? Aren't they weird? Like the dude who was stabbed in the street in, was it in New York? And his girlfriend, I think, was in shock. And also, I don't know, it was weird. His girlfriend just kind of stood there. It was all weird to me. His friends literally went to GoFundMe and started a fund for themselves, begging for money so that they could get, what are they? So that they could remember him and grieve while taking time off work. What? Did you guys see that story? They were described as depraved ghouls profiting off of Ryan, their friend Ryan's death. Ryan Thorson, the Brooklyn activist who was murdered. And his friend set up this GoFundMe asking for help to offset the cost. Literally is what they said. Quote, to offset the cost of working class people taking time off work to mourn. That is some white progressive privilege right there. Holy cow, man. They wanted to raise $70,000. That's a salary. Dude. That's a nice salary. Holy cow. And that's what they literally said in the GoFundMe thing. And here, apparently they raised $20,000 of it. Who gave them $20,000 for this? Now that kind of stuff, you know, the Oprah and The Rock thing, yeah, they got a lot of money. And I'm sure that, I bet they probably donated a lot. I don't know. I mean, because Oprah's got a house there, you know, and isn't The Rock like part of his family? And aren't they from Hawaii? Like he's part, like part of his Polynesian. So I don't know. Like I think it's, I don't understand the purpose of getting mad because somebody has a lot of money and they're asking you to, if you would, are interested to give. I do think it's probably helpful in some cases, maybe to just tell people that you're also giving if you're asking for a lot of money because people are broke. I get that. But did he really need to do a video where he said paycheck to paycheck 5,000 times and seemed, you know, I don't know. It was just weird to me. The whole thing is weird. Do you think you seem awfully quiet, Kane? So I am inferring that I just you see this hate as, him.
No, of course. I don't hate the. I don't even know him. But all I know is that this looks like Hollywood PR stuff right here. This is what it is. It's Hollywood PR stuff.
Are we that cynical?
Yes.
You are very eager.
I am.
I mean, yes, I am. Like, I'm Diogenes jaded. is an icon. But
definitely jaded.
I don't know. I don't know what it is. Like, I have always prided myself on my cynicism because I just think it's a realistic way of looking at the world. But at the same time, there's something sad about being so cynical that you even look at, you have to sit here and measure every deed.
Well,
is it really
it
a good deed?
I can turn it on and off.
Yeah, I don't know if I can.
Yeah, I do.
I don't know. Yeah. Like, I find myself going, I'm literally measuring whether that's a good deed or whether that's a grift. Right?
Yeah.
I mean, the thing with the Ryan Thorson Carson thing is definitely a grift. I mean, his friends are morons. They are so stupid. I hope they should be haunted. That's ridiculous. $70,000 to go, but geez, Minnelli. All right, we got a lot more on the way, folks. Second hour coming up. The immigration situation. Okay, so could this happen here? What we saw in Israel. Stick with us.
Position of sieges that endanger the lives of civilians by depriving them of goods essential for their survival is prohibited under international humanitarian law.
That's the United Nations. No one cares. Shut up. First off, it was Israel that's been sending them aid and food and everything else and other humanitarian resources this entire time, even as Hamas was bombing and carrying out terror against Israel. Welcome back to the program. Dana Lash here with you at the top of the second hour. You can listen coast to coast. You can stream the radio program as well. Watch the simulcast YouTube, Facebook, Channel 347, DirecTV. Yeah, some of the stuff yesterday, I watched I didn't mean to, but it autoplayed. It was a video of Hamas after they killed everyone in a kibbutz. They shot a dog in the head, a family's dog, a family pet. And then they decapitated 40 babies. That was confirmed by international press. 40 babies. Hamas is an elected entity. That's what people voted for. And that comes, you know, when you have Hamas that makes these decisions, those are consequences. The ruling entity, they chose to put everyone's lives at risk. And at some point you have to realize when you're voting for Hamas and you know what Hamas stands for, are you unaware that, oh my gosh, it's not like this is a big secret. Why are we acting like this is a big secret? I realize it's politically incorrect to say that elections have consequences. It's politically incorrect to say that terrorists who are making horrible choices and endangering the lives of people need to be dealt with brutally. But that's the reality of the situation in which we are in. This is what Hamas chose. They chose this. No one else did. And a response is not aggression. And I do not care about the lives of people who rape women and decapitate 40 babies. I don't care. I cannot be prevailed upon to care more about the lives of the people who engage in those atrocities than the lives of the innocents. And if you do, then you're incompatible with this world. End of. The president apparently is supposed to be speaking here momentarily. We may take some of it. Some of it, I said. I don't know. I guess they got to maybe hopefully they can give him some of Hunter's crack before he walks out on stage. He's been MIA. It is just devastating the optic. He has just not been there. I don't know how somebody, he hasn't been there. Where's he been? Nobody knows.
I heard a rumor.
What's your rumor, Kane?
What?
Wait. I just, Kane gets over there and all of a sudden it like turns into tea time. He's like, well, you know, I heard a rumor.
I did. Right, I do have kind of that next way, too. That was pretty good.
You do? Yeah, you were like,
But I was reading in Town Hall, I think it was this morning, that apparently he was being deposed in some way in regards to...
Well, that was a couple of days ago, wasn't it?
No, that was yesterday.
Oh, he was being deposed
so
yesterday?
Sunday and Monday. So apparently of those classified documents when he was a senator and wasn't able to have, they're deposing him on that stuff right now.
So he probably used up all the energy from the steroid shot they gave him on that, and he couldn't be prevailed upon to make any kind of statement, a video.
Sounds accurate, yes.
Yeah. There you go, yeah. Fascinating. I'm just saying, guys, just saying. So this, you know, what the United States does, and I know that I was pulling this piece up, because there's discussion as to whether or not there's going to be like a spec ops group sent in, maybe a team or something sent in to rescue the Americans in Gaza. And we should not, I mean, and we really don't need to. We don't, Israel doesn't need military help. They are more than capable of annihilating their enemies. The only reason they haven't is because Hamas and the rest of the world are like, oh, you're so mean. How dare you respond after we've lobbed rockets at you for a decade over that? How dare you? They haven't because of the optic. And I don't think that they need to worry about that anymore. I mean, they have to be, Hamas has to be ended for forever. That's not up for negotiation. Did you see the thing floating yesterday, Kane, how Hamas was like, well, we're open to negotiation? Yeah, no. You don't get to say that you're willing to sit down for negotiations when you still have hostages. And when the world is still uncovering the depths of your atrocities. Who beheads babies? I think they should put me in charge. I would volunteer to be put in charge of the punishment for terrorists who decapitate babies. Planned Parenthood's like, how'd you do that so quickly? Oh, I said it. Get mad. I mean, it's just horrible, the atrocities that people are seeing now. So no, you don't get to say, oh, well, we're ready to negotiate after. Israel's going to make them understand what the FO part of FAFO means. And that's, you know, I mean, they're apparently ready to go. It is going to be horrible, though, if they enter Gaza and they have to go essentially door to door, because you realize, first of all, the tunnel network that's over there. As I was telling you last hour, just to give you an example, you know, Gaza has a sewer situation. I mean, they have sewage that just runs out into the Mediterranean. They've had to close beaches up and down that coastline because of raw sewage in the sea. And that's because Hamas does not use people. Literally, they would send them money to fix their sewer system. Hamas buys bombs. Then they would send actual pipes. Oh, well, I guess you're not using the money to fix your sewer system. So we'll go ahead and we'll send you actual pipes. And instead of using those pipes and replacing pipes and maintaining their sewage infrastructure, they turned those pipes into literal bombs. Because that is what people were finding after crudely made bombs were sent over to Israel. They would find them after detonation. They would be laying in fields and they're like, is this a sewer pipe? This is a pipe? Yeah. That's what they were using their money. That's what they use their resources on. So they have a vast network of these underground tunnels where they had their weapons caches, their weapons cache, all of this stuff. And that's going to be really, really hard to go through on foot, bit by bit. That's going to be tough. And there's going to be casualties. And then you also don't get to demand that people come and sit and that you tell them that you're open for negotiation and act like you're calling the shots when you are also simultaneously announcing that you're going to start beheading hostages. For every hostage Hamas kills, 50 Hamas members need to be executed. They only understand brutality. Why are people so soft? Why are people so damn soft? We live in an era where the indulgence of these people, the softness of people, this is the indulgence that terrorists and criminals thrive on. We're going to out-nice our way out of this. We're just going to be nice to them, and that's going to solve the problem. That's never worked, ever. But you know what does? Putting the fear of God in them. That does. I mean, there's All their history is littered with stories of rulers who had finally had enough. And they answered the brutishness of brutes in ways that terrified the brutes. Vlad Tepes is one of them. Romanian hero. He was done dirty, by the way. Cassius, going through all of, like, going through history, there's so many examples of this. And this is another situation. Hamas isn't going to answer to niceness. In fact, they count on that. That's part of their strategy. They count on that in order to survive, in order to succeed. They're planning on that. They need you to be nice. It's like Patrick Swayze with Roadhouse Kane. I know I cite this movie all the time, but it is a cinematic masterpiece. Let's establish this before we go further. Roadhouse is one of the greatest films of our time. It really is. And the Dalton School of niceness that should be taught everywhere. It's be nice until it's time to not be nice. It's time to not be nice right now. Really. They're only going to answer to they're only going to answer to violence. And people need to understand too that peace through strength and making people afraid of what you may do in response, that's not a flex. That is an unfortunate last place to go. Nobody wants to do that. I mean, except for Hamas, who apparently get off on decapitating babies, you know. Nobody with a soul, nobody that has any kind of morality within them wants to do that. It is unfortunately a last resort. And we are at that last resort now because this cannot keep happening. This has been building time and time again. And you knew that something was going to pop off, particularly after Saudi Arabia and Israel began even normalizing relations further. You knew it was just a matter of time before they did something. I don't think anyone could ever anticipate that it was going to be this bad. But they cannot, there's no such thing as coexist with Hamas. They have to be entirely wiped out. They have to be wiped off the face of the earth. All of Hamas has got to go. And I don't think that there should be any kind of, I don't think that Israel should have to give up any ground because they shouldn't. That's Gaza's theirs. West Bank is theirs. End of. You can disagree with me all you want to. I really don't care. I don't care. You're not sitting at my table, so you don't get a help and a what served. But this is the choice that they made. Now, how is the U.S. going to respond? As I said, there was discussion so far. I think that this is something that this came out of the White House. Nobody's actually spoken to this so far. It was just reports that the White House is considering spec ops just to get Americans out of Gaza. Because this administration cannot have another Afghanistan type abandonment story on its hands. They can't. And we're not going to leave it. If you just let our guys do what they do, here's how you respond. Send our spec ops to go get our folks out of Gaza. Suspend all rules of engagement. No rules of engagement at all whatsoever. Let them go do what they need to do. That's one of the biggest problems. Our bunch of pencil pushers, ass-sitting pencil pushers, who get out there and they try to tell war fighters how to prosecute a war. Shut those people up. Get them out of the way. People like General Michael Hayden, who we're going to talk about in a little bit, because of the stupid stuff this guy. You know what? That's why we don't win any wars anymore, because of stupid generals like that guy. We're going to talk about him coming up. But let our warfighters do what they got to do. Suspend all rules of engagement and say, you do what you feel like you need to get done. Get back home. That's it. That's the way to do it.
And now, all of the news you would probably miss. It's time for Dana's Quick Five.
We're still waiting for the president to make remarks. He's 23, 24 minutes late at this point coming out. They were scheduled for 1 p.m. Eastern, 12 p.m. Central. So we may take some of those depending on when he comes out and actually gives these remarks. Speaking of the president, his brother now is compromised. Apparently, he posted all kinds of naked selfies on a gay dating site called Guys with iPhones, and his brother admitted that they were his photos, saying, quote, my phone must have been hacked. Apparently, the photos were uploaded in 2018. Nobody believes that he was hacked. Nobody does. What is with this family doing being gross? Honestly, this whole family is like has issues. They have serious issues. Some schools are cutting honors classes to address what they say is racial equity, which is one of the most racist things I've ever heard of in my entire life. Districts in California and Illinois are reporting data saying that there's some benefits from the changes. So instead of helping minority students get into honors classes, they decided to cut honors classes because they're assuming that apparently minority students cannot be helped to get into honors classes, or maybe their teachers are so horrible that they're just completely incompetent and can't assist these students in getting into these classes. But either way, it's the what is the saying that it's the racism of lowered expectations, the bigotry of lowered expectations. There's a warning over a shortage. This has been going on for quite some time. Over ADHD medication, patients are saying that they've had to call dozens of pharmacies to get a hold of their medication. Customs agents seized a box of giraffe poo at a Minneapolis airport. Don't ask questions. No, they apparently, it was a passenger arriving in Minneapolis last week from a vacation in Kenya, and they decided, I guess, as you know, most people get like tchotchkes or a t-shirt, you know, maybe a stuffed animal. This person brought back giraffe poop. U.S. Customs and Border Protection highlighted the intercepted fecal matter to draw awareness. They said you can't have agricultural contamination and spread of disease. You can't bring that kind of stuff back. It was an Iowa woman. She did declare it when she was passing through customs. It did catch agents by surprise. You have to declare this kind of stuff, and then you can't bring in, like, there's fruits, there's all kinds of stuff. When I was going through customs coming back from Italy, I had to declare my limoncello. And I had to like explain to them, no, it's limoncello, it's a liqueur. Like literally nothing's going to survive in this. It's like 1,011%. Nothing's going to survive in this, I promise you. They let it go through, but they were like, wait a minute, you said lemon. I'm like, yes, limoncello. We have a lot more on the way. The president may be speaking. We got to talk about our own immigration problem as well. Stick with us.
Looking for the drive-through version of The Dana Show? Check out the best highlights from every show and Dana's Absurd Truth podcast, posted daily from The Dana Show.
Is that money now going to be refrozen?
I don't want to get any of the policy decisions going forward here, Martha. As I said last time you and I talked about this, that money can be refrozen at any time.
Doesn't that seem like a good time to do that?
We won't hesitate to make that decision if we feel we need to, but I'm not going to get ahead of a policy decision that hasn't been made yet.
So that is John Kirby. He says the administration has no plans to refreeze the $6 billion. That's the thing. If the argument from the administration is that there's no way that they could have spent it because it wasn't transferred to them, then there should be no issue in freezing it, right? Isn't that how it works? Isn't that how all of this is? And there shouldn't be an issue in freezing it. So I don't understand the why there would be any objections to that, or why they haven't done that already. That's the big thing. Why haven't they done it already? Good grief. Now the president, well, how he's like, what, 35 minutes late now. He's supposed to speak finally on the issue of the attack on Israel. And I mean, he finally yesterday released a statement about all of this. He's been MIA on everything. I'm looking at my monitor up above just to see, you know, I'm using that as a way to see when the president comes out. Still not out. He was supposed to speak 35 minutes ago, right? I had that right, right? Not, yep. I didn't have the time zone incorrect. It was 1 Eastern, 12 Central.
Yep.
I wonder what the holdup is. Doesn't, because he's not out yet. Not out yet at all. So there you go. if he comes out, we'll take some of this, but hopefully he can answer maybe as to why the United States hasn't refrozen that $6 billion. Actually, it's way more than that, by the way. It's a lot more than that. The billions in aid that from the sanctions on the sale of Iranian oil and gas, because we were trying to prevent them from enriching themselves. I was telling Kane that, you know, really since the days of the Iraq invasion, I mean, the majority of, like, a significant percentage of our troop, like attacks on our troops, et cetera, whether it's from the Iranian proxies or like Iranian mines. We have two friends who were blown up with mines that were supplied by Iran. One of them is on Fox as a contributor, lost his legs. They are major facilitators of terror. Why would you unfreeze that at all? I want to know what the administration, going back even since the first term of Barack Obama, what they get out of this. So in the meantime, the reservists have been called up in Israel, IDF, and this is going to look like it looks like the initial offensive strategy, which they put in motion the siege. And the IDF has been restoring control in these communities in which Hamas went in, and we're seizing entire towns. I think so far, with the border closed, they're looking at trying to eliminate enemy terrorists, well, enemies on their own within the borders now. So 360,000 reservists mobilized yesterday. That is in addition to active duty. I don't even think that they won't even need all of that for any kind of siege in Gaza. They're not even going to, I don't think they'll need all of that. And when you look at, so you have Hamas in the southern part of the country, you have Hezbollah with Lebanon in the northern part of the country. They don't even need, just looking at the number of the reservists, 360,000 alone, they won't need at all. I don't even think a third of that to do what they need to do in Gaza. So if Hezbollah had any idea that Israel was going to be tied up entirely with Gaza, they might want to rethink their strategy, because that's not the case for sure. Not at all. And so the hostage taking, I'm pulling up this piece here where it said that they had been, Hamas was threatening to kill hostages, etc. One of the things, as a friend of mine made the observation on Facebook, that this is not the same, and I don't want to say it is business as usual, but this is not the same sort of route as usual, I think, that Hamas was anticipating, because it seems as though, you know, even the families of these people that have been taken, they're giving consideration to what the country has to do as a way to survive and protect everyone, as opposed to just thinking solely about the hostages, which is detrimental to Hamas's plan. They really thought that they were going to be able to use that as a way to bring Israel to their knees, and that's not happening. So they're not the best strategists. I mean, clearly. So this is, I think, the thing to watch here, and what people are maybe hoping to get from, if the president makes any remarks, is really kind of what he says if he mentions Iran at all. Because let's be clear, this is just a proxy battle with Iran. It always has been. Whether it's the Houthi, whether it's Hezbollah, whether it's Hamas, these are the three H's that have been entirely financed and facilitated and encouraged by Iran. And they've done this so that they can avoid being implicated themselves as, oh, well, this is this country involved in this aggression. Although now they've pretty much admitted that they planned, through that Wall Street Journal piece, as they had reported, that Iran was, you know, had helped plan this from the beginning. So whether or not the president mentions that, if that comes up, that's going to be very telling, I think. That's going to be an interesting thing to watch. Now, a couple of other things as we wait that I want to touch on, because these are very clarifying times, are they not? I wanted to hit this story of, let me pull this up, General Michael Hayden. Now, one of the back and forths that we've had is Senator Tommy Tuberville, right? There's been, we've talked about this issue before, how he's been blocking military promotions because Democrats took what is a standard, always has been a very standard, very innocuous NDAA, which is the Military, the Defense Authorization Act, and they have taken that and slipped in it a poison pill, special interest spending, including taxpayer-funded abortion on demand. And that Tuberville and Tuberville and others have said that this is, you know, it's a violation of the Hyde Amendment, which is true, yes, because remember, money is fungible. It's a violation of the Hyde Amendment, et cetera. But also, why are we paying for that? They also had proposed taxpayer-funded trans surgeries. I mean, you have veterans who can't get taxpayer-funded surgeries to deal with medically necessary things brought on by combat, but we're talking about spending taxpayer dollars to rearrange the Franken genitals of people who want to identify as a different unscientific sex than with which they were born. That doesn't make any sense to me. This is the stuff that Tuberville opposes. And as of such, he's been a holdout. Democrats have a razor-thin majority, even closer than what we have in the House as Republicans. But he has opposed this in the Senate. And so everyone's been hitting him with, oh, well, you're this is dangerous what you're doing, et cetera, et cetera. You're endangering national security without any regard for what Democrats did to take what has always been a bipartisan authorization bill for defense spending and taking it and have politicized it without any regard for Democrats' actions on that for the first time. So let's introduce General Michael Hayden. General Michael Hayden is a tub of fun, right? Lunchbox over here. This guy is with generals like him. There's no question as to why we haven't won wars in a long time. He is former director of CIA and NSA. While at the NSA, he got in trouble because he lied to Congress about spying on Americans. They were collecting our phone conversations and everything else, domestic surveillance, and he lied under oath to Congress about that. So he's a special kind of person. Also a former director of the CIA. And so he said this yesterday. He quote tweeted some moronic Democrat activist who overfiltered her avatar on Twitter because she's not attractive enough to not try to look like marzipan. And she tweeted, quote, should Tommy Tuberville be removed from his committee? Yes or no? General Michael Hayden tweeted, quote, how about the human race? Yeah. So for the people arguing that only the government and law enforcement should have guns, this retired general and former CIA director and director of the NSA literally suggested killing a sitting senator. Yeah, that guy. And then he had the audacity to continue to complain about it and call the people who objected to it MAGA nuts, which I don't even know what that's supposed to mean. Yeah, again, with generals like that, no wonder we don't win wars. Is that an insurrection? You got a leftist who's, remember, these are the people who say words are violence. So I'm just going to go ahead and say that this is a full-on call for an assassination of a sitting senator, because that's what they've done. If they want to play that game, then, and I saved the screenshot, but he hasn't lied. He hasn't done it. There's not going to be any kind of repercussions for him. Nothing like that. But this is what the left, this is the kind of stuff they do. So he again, lied to Congress about domestic surveillance. Does it make you feel comfortable to know that there are people like this in the upper echelon of our government? Do you still disbelieve in a deep state after knowing that this guy was director of the CIA, and this is the kind of stuff that he says? Do you have any idea? Do you have any questions left in your mind as to why people distrust their government now? I mean, the answer to all of this should be no. But it seems insurrection-y. Just got to say, it seems a little insurrection-y to say this. He had tweeted, like I said, he came back and tweeted, I was surprised to wake up this morning and discover that Many MAGA nuts had lost their mind over my suggestion that Tuberville not be considered a member of the Humanity. No, no, no. He said off of the, he said out of the race. Like, you literally were talking about killing him, but okay. Okay. And we wonder why recruitment is down. This guy serves in the middle, in the, served in the military. Why would any parent encourage their child to serve in our military knowing that they might fall under the jurisdiction of some self-imported, self-important fat ass like General Michael Hayden? Who, by the way, I had, there were a lot of people who were like, yeah, he was nothing more than a pencil pusher, like combat vets who were like, yeah, we're familiar with him, coming out and saying, yeah, he's a pencil pusher. I'm not going to argue with that. I'm just going to let that lay on the table for your consideration. You know, I'm just going to let the people who are actually in the you know what make those determinations.
It's his life mission to make bad decisions. It's time for Florida Man.
So a Florida man fatally stabbed his brother's friend after nobody shared weed with him, says the sheriff. Sheriff's office. The Florida man was fatally stabbed by his friend's brother after the alleged killer flipped out because no one shared the weed with him. He didn't get a chance. Joseph McDonald, 31, was charged with murder after a manhunt. He was arrested Sunday. Volusia County Sheriff deputies responded to a home about 11 in the morning. They encountered the 21-year-old victim who stumbled outside as he bled from a stab wound to his stomach. The victim pointed to the house when he asked who was behind the attack, but couldn't provide more information. He did not make it. He passed at the hospital. The suspect fled the house following the stabbing. They identified, along with a witness, McDonald as the person of interest. They had a helicopter crew, all kinds of stuff. They got his arrest on camera. He was charged with first-degree murder. And he said that they had a fight over not sharing weed, and it escalated from there. Wow, this guy's literally going to, like, prison probably forever now for that. Oh, my heavens. Let's see here. A Florida man who shot down a law enforcement drone now faces 10 years in prison. It was a law enforcement drone being used at a business near his home, and he's facing a decade in prison. Wendell Goney, 52, of Mount Dora, pled guilty Thursday in federal court to possessing. He's a convicted felon, so he's not even allowed to possess a firearm. His sentencing scheduled for January. There was a burglary at this 10-acre industrial property. And so they had a drone, a $29,000 drone that they were using. And then the gunfire from a neighboring property caused it to crash into a metal roof and catch fire. Jeez. The deputies went to the property and they found Goney, who said he shot it down with a 22 because it had been harassing him.
Oh, sounds same.
This guy, check this out. He literally had 29 felony convictions, aggravated assault, all kinds of violent stuff, drug possession, burglary, lots of assaults. They said that he was actually barred from possessing a firearm, so he's in a lot of trouble. Oh, my heavens. A Florida man was arrested for stealing his ex-employer's street sweeper to, quote, to do a job with a competing company. How do you steal a street sweeper? I mean, they're kind of big, right? He is behind bars. He took a stolen street sweeper for a spin. I'm assuming not like the way that we would define it in downtown St. Louis, but like, you know, like the actual street sweeper. Only people who listened to, who understand country grammar will get that song. Let's see, or get that reference. Marion County Sheriff's, they said that Kevin Aponte was arrested Thursday, charged with grand theft of a motor vehicle. A lawn care business owner told deputies somebody stole his street sweeper. And then when they asked Aponte about it, he's like, well, he's separated from the business. I love the language. He tried to be all legalese. And he had asked to use the street sweeper and was denied, said deputies. But he said he just needed to borrow it to do a job. And now he's in trouble. We're going to talk tomorrow about how a guy broke into a jail. You usually break out of them, but not into them. But that's not what happened in this case. We got that tomorrow. Third hour on the way. Senator Rand Paul joins us soon.
I'll be honest, I am angry. I am angry with the world that allowed the dehumanization of Israelis and sanitized the terrorism of Hamas. I must say, I love this show and I love this network, but I've got to ask, who is writing the scripts? Hamas The people who did this, they are not fighters, Jonathan. They are not militants. And I'm looking right at the camera. They are terrorists.
Yeah, he's right on that. Who is writing the scripts for them? Fascinating. That's American Defamation League on MSNBC blasting them because they're not fighters. They're terrorists. It's who they are. We're waiting for the president to speak at some point, whether or not, we'll see if that happens. And then we also have Senator Rand Paul is going to be joining us later on at the bottom of the program. And as all of this rages on, a couple of things to touch on. And I want to make this clear because I don't like not being prepared in anything. In fact, I am always over-prepared for something to the point where it annoys other people. Whenever the lockdown happened, I didn't have to rush to go get anything. I didn't have to worry about anything. I had literally everything already. People were asking me for toilet paper. I had everything. Didn't have to worry about Purell. Didn't have to worry about, you would be shocked at the stuff that I have squirreled away. Because I just always like to be prepared, right? I mean, I just, there's nothing wrong with preparation. And especially so in strategy. There's this, the point of engaging and doing something, if you're going to do something big, is to make sure that when you do it, you can immediately, you have a substitute, you have a replacement, you have something ready for all of that. And this has always been my whole problem with the way that and I'm only touching on this as it relates to preparation with this, with for instance, the speaker thing, because the House is frozen right now. Now there's certain things, there's certain appropriations, I think it's three something billion that is just auto approved for Israel. But if there is something goes sideways or we have to do something, whatever, we're kind of frozen. This is not a time that you want the House to be frozen. We live in, the world's evil right now. We are living in very dangerous times. And you have to always make sure that you are prepared. We live in a time when we have a weak president. We have an administration that, by the grace of God, we haven't stumbled into a World War III. Because this administration is so hopeless and so sloppy and ridiculous. So we cannot afford to not be prepared. It's also the one thing in D.C. that we control is the House. We don't control the Senate. We don't control the White House. But we control the House of Representatives. And I don't want to blow something up unless I'm ready to go with a substitute. Now, the question hasn't ever been whether or not McCarthy's a good speaker. I did not like him. I took some heat because I criticized Trump for endorsing him. I don't understand why Trump endorsed him. Trump didn't just endorse him, he rallied for him. I could not, for the life of me, understand why. I get it that some people wanted a moderate because they thought maybe that's going to be a hell of a lot easier to navigate with a 5-seat majority. Now that argument, if you make that argument to me, I understand the merit of your argument, which is different because apparently we have a horrible comprehension illiteracy in this country, which is very different from saying that you support it. Understanding someone's argument isn't the same thing as saying that you agree with it. And I couldn't agree, on the other hand, with the arguments being made that, oh, he's good and he's a conservative. Well, he's not. He was part of the Young Guns. Before my radio program was nationally syndicated, I was making fun of that Young Guns book with him and Paul Ryan and Eric Cantor on the cover. And so I criticized Trump when he endorsed him. And oh my gosh, I caught some hell from the same people who are mad at me now. Because I questioned why, during a time that is so uncertain, would we not just singularly blow up the speakership. No, no, no. But why would you do it without having a plan and a substitute ready to go? That has always been the objection. That's always been the question that I've had. And with someone like Matt Gaetz, the reason I that I'm not a fan of Matt Gaetz isn't because it doesn't have anything to do with McCarthy. In fact, I think he's too much like McCarthy. Matt Gaetz says that he doesn't take, you know, lobbyist money and all this other stuff. Well, that may be true, but he doesn't have to. He also gets more earmarks than almost any other member of Congress. You might want to look into that. That's not a very conservative thing, is it? To get a bunch of pork for your district? Yeah, you might want to look into that. Rubber stamping omnibus bills, big spending omnibus bills. That's not a good thing either. So my not being a fan of him has literally nothing to do with McCarthy. It's because he's too much like him. Now, that being said, I don't care about the power jockeying in the House, only so far as it affects our ability to be ready if something goes sideways. Again, we live in dangerous times. And to go all, I mean, what we saw in the House was literally Leroy Jenkins playing out in the House. You guys are all familiar with that, right? Can't get that up for me. The guy was playing, that's his name. Wasn't that actually his name, Leroy Jenkins?
Oh, yeah. Do you want that?
Yeah. No, this was like years ago. It's so funny. It became like a whole thing. He was playing World of Warcraft online, and he just ended up charging headfirst into just like a boss fight and got his whole strike team eliminated. And he yelled, "Leroy Jenkins!" They were debating like how they were going to do this. And he just ran in. That's it. He just ran in. This is back in 2005. That's how long ago. That's what this felt like, what they did in the House. It felt like Leroy Jenkins. Yeah, listen, this is what it was like. Yeah, this is what happened.
We'll be in trouble if we don't take him down quick. I think it's pretty good. Wait a
minute. Do we know if there's any cussing in this or not?
Yeah, I don't know. Go ahead. We'll ask questions.
Number crunch real quick.
Give me a sec. I'm coming up with 32.33 repeating, of course, percentage of survival. Sorry.
Oh, it's a lot better than we usually do.
He literally runs into the room.
Oh my God, he just ran in.
And he gets obliterated. And you can hear all the other players going, "Oh my gosh, he just literally ran in there." So they had to go in because at that point, the fight's engaged. They got to run in. That's literally what happened. That was the video game equivalent of what Matt Gaetz did. And like I said, not being a fan of Gaetz has nothing to do with McCarthy. It has everything to do with he's too much like McCarthy. I don't care who the speaker is. I do care if you don't have a strategy and a substitute ready to rock out of the gate. That is my problem. And the reason I bring this up is because what happens if something goes sideways? Now, some people brought up, "Oh, well, you have a speaker pro temp, Dana." So, you know, that's not true. Well, actually, I don't know what the argument is there, because it is true. The speaker pro temp is very limited in what they can do. I mean, they can't consider any new kind of legislation, anything like that, unless it's already basically a finalized measure. They are very limited in what they are able to do. And to be helpful, what I'll do is I'll send out literally from the House's website what the speaker pro temp can do. Now, they can like administer an oath of office to a member elect. They can announce appointments made. They can make, you know, some with different conferees. They can appoint members to attend funerals. They can, you know, spread a veto message from the president. Things like that. They may not administer oath of office without unanimous consent. If they have House approval to do so, they can. And announce appointments made by pursuant to law. But they're very limited in what they can do. There's certain things. So there's a speaker pro temp, but they're very limited in the scope of their power. Long story short. Who was it that reminded me? You know that scene in Ghostbusters? When they're all in the library. And it's the full, what is it? The full torso apparition. And they're going up on this ghost who's in the library who had been haunting this library, and it was like their first ghost job. And they really, at that point, hadn't talked about what they were going to do. And Dan Aykroyd's character is like, get her. And they rush her. And as they rush her, she turns around and does her scary ghost thing. And they all freak out and they run away. That's also very similar. It's a full torso vapor apparition. And, you know, afterwards, it was funny because Bill Murray was like, that was your plan? Get her? Like that. Get him. That was your plan? Get him? What follows? What's next? Get him? That's your plan? I mean, all hell's breaking loose in the Middle East, and we're frozen. We are entirely frozen. That's a problem. And so that has always been my criticism of this. Is that there wasn't, I mean, it was like there was no substitute ready to go. There was no plan. And now this is where we're at. And so what happens, you know, heaven forbid something like this happens in the United States, but hell, we don't know because the border's open. We have no idea. We don't know. The border's wide open. Who knows what'll happen? It's kind of terrifying if you think about it. But what's going to happen? What if? There's a lot of what ifs. So this is why it's very important that, and this, again, I go back to, this is literally the one thing that we control in D.C. I don't want to not control it at a time like this. Now, coming up, we have Senator Rand Paul who's supposed to be joining us. But we also have the president who's supposed to be speaking at some point here. They said that he was, Juan pointed this out, they said that he was in the Situation Room, but then they were showing like an old picture of him being in the Situation Room. So who knows what's going on. But we're going to get into all of that.
And now, all of the news you would probably miss. It's time for Dana's Quick Five.
We have the president speaking now. If we could prepare to take some of that, that would be great. He's like, what, over an hour late? An hour and 20-something minutes behind. We'll take some of that if we have it.
More than 1,000 civilians slaughtered, not just killed, slaughtered in Israel. Among them, at least 14 American citizens killed. Parents butchered using their bodies to try to protect their children. Killed. Stomach-turning reports of babies being killed. Entire families slain. Young people massacred while attending a musical festival to celebrate peace. Women raped, assaulted, paraded as trophies. Families hid their fear for hours and hours, desperately trying to keep their children quiet to avoid drawing attention. And thousands of wounded, alive but carrying with them the bullet holes and the shrapnel wounds and the memory of what they endured. You all know these traumas never go away. There's still so many families desperately waiting to hear the fate of their loved ones, not knowing if they're alive or dead or hostages. Infants in their mother's arms, grandparents in wheelchairs, Holocaust survivors abducted and held hostage. Hostages whom Hamas has now threatened to execute in violation of every code of human morality. It's abhorrent. The brutality of Hamas, these bloodthirstiness brings to mind the worst rampages of ISIS. This is terrorism. But sadly, for the Jewish people, it's not new. This attack has brought to the surface painful memories and the scars left by a millennia of anti-Semitism and genocide of the Jewish people. So in this moment, we must be crystal clear. We stand with Israel. We stand with Israel. And we will make sure Israel has what it needs to take care of its citizens, defend itself, and respond to this attack. There's no justification for terrorism. There's no excuse.
Hamas does not stand for the Palestinian people's right to dignity and self-determination. Its stated purpose is the annihilation of the State of Israel and the murder of Jewish people. They use Palestinian civilians as human shields. Hamas offers nothing but terror and bloodshed with no regard.
So the president is speaking live right now. We're up against a hard break. Right now, he's just giving the overview of what we all know that has happened. We'll give you any updates specifically as it relates to any kind of involvement with the U.S. We have Senator Rand Paul, who's going to be joining us as well, coming up. Stick with us.
Whether you're a policy wonk, a news junkie, or simply someone hungry for insightful discourse, the Dana Show podcast has your back. Follow Dana on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
For 75 years, Israel has stood as the ultimate guarantor of the security of Jewish people around the world, so that the atrocities of the past could never happen again. And let there be no doubt, the United States has Israel's back. We will make sure the Jewish and democratic state of Israel can defend itself today, tomorrow, as we always have. It's as simple as that. These atrocities.
The president speaking, actually, I think just finished some remarks. I'm looking at my monitor right now about the situation further unfolding in Israel. These are the first remarks that he's made in person. We had a statement. He just said something about the Americans that were taken hostage and those who were killed in this attack on Israel by Hamas. We live in very clarifying times, very evil and very clarifying times. Welcome back to the program. Dana Lash here with you. Bottom of this third hour. You can listen to the program coast to coast on a terrestrial station near you. You can also stream the radio program. You can watch the simulcast, Channel 347, DirecTV. When you consider this, and then about also consider what we're about to dive into related to probably one, I just want to show you the thickness of this book. One of the thickest books I've ever seen. Normally books that are authored by people who are lawmakers are ghostwritten. They're very thin and they're very boring to read. I feel like I'm reading something now that's going to be like a series on television, but it's based in real life. It is terrifying. And I'm not even like deep into this book yet. But it's just out today. It's called Deception, The Great Cover-Up, by Senator Rand Paul from the beautiful state of Kentucky. He joins us via Skype today. Senator, I feel like it's odd if I tell you congrats on the book because it's, I mean, it's a weird, this is like a thriller. I mean, but it's real life involving lives, freedoms, our tax dollars. This is an exhaustive book of evidence that gets into everything that we have lived through. Maybe the greatest cover up in our nation's history. One of the greatest offenses against our rights in our nation's history. You've cataloged all of this. So thank you for doing so. I'll start with that. Thank you for writing this book.
You know, I think we can celebrate if we actually learn something. One, we should learn the lockdowns didn't work. The lockdowns were counterproductive and not based in science. But two, we should learn that we funded the research that led to this pandemic, yes, and we should quit funding it, particularly in totalitarian countries, but we really shouldn't even be funding it here at home. There's a great many scientists who have now come forward, professors, long-term journal editors, who are saying we're not learning anything from this gain-of-function research and that it has more danger than good. And some of the scientists are actually saying that we risk civilization. It's a gamble with civilization to be creating viruses in a lab that could escape and wipe out half of the population.
Wow. One of the things that we're funding, and I want to dive more into this book as well, because I think that, you know, this is a huge cover up. The fact that we've been funding this and there was no regulatory oversight is terrifying. You touch on that as well. Before I get too far ahead of myself, I kind of want to also get your response to, you know, what the president was talking about just here. This is kind of your book is out today. It's a very horrible time, considering everything that's happening in Israel. I think I know that you've been very, very consistent on U.S. involvement And I think there's been discussion of maybe a spec ops team going to Gaza and saving the Americans that are held hostage there. I know we have two carriers now that are in the area, I guess, as a show of force. Just kind of your thoughts on how this is being managed from the White House and what you think our response should be.
Well, you know, I think the most important things are, can we save the hostages? Is there a way to save the hostages? And two, is there a way to create a situation in the future where Hamas doesn't have the ability to do this, either militarily, economically, or structurally? If there's a way that Hamas can be damaged such that they can't do this again. And also, I think it can be a unifying moment for the rest of the world to say, if this is what these people are for, if they think they're going to convince us by killing women and children, unarmed young people at a concert, that really maybe more of the world will come to know that this isn't, you know, something that's in any way justifiable. So I think there could be a chance that this will completely backfire on them, that by them doing this, yeah, they were able to kill people and civilians, but by doing so, it showed who they were and will show the world that this is something that really, I think, can't be tolerated by civilized countries.
It can't be tolerated by civilized countries. Talking with Senator Rand Paul, the beautiful state of Kentucky. One of the things that I thought of when I was preparing for today, and I started reading your book this week. As soon as I got it, I started looking at this because you have more in here than, I mean, I work in commentary and I work in news and I digest all of this stuff, and you have stuff in here that I wasn't even aware of. You know, you talk about the lack of regulatory oversight as it pertains to the research into bioweaponry, specifically this virus. And it just makes me think, if things are so sloppy with regards to that, who's to say that there wouldn't be a terror cell in the U.S. and they wouldn't get their hands on something like this and we could see it being deployed against Americans at, you know, with horrific results?
Yeah, it's at the point now where they say it doesn't even require sophisticated scientists to create a virus. You can order out of a catalog the DNA to create the polio virus. You can literally call a DNA company on the internet and say, hey, I want this sequence and this sequence. And there's enough knowledge out there that people can put them together. And so that's why this debate was going on even before COVID. 10 years before COVID, a scientist in the Netherlands took the avian flu, a bird flu, which doesn't infect humans very well, and said, wow, wonder if I could take this bird flu and make it so it spreads through the air, make it aerosolized. And then there was a debate once he proved that he could do it, whether it should be published or whether it would be a roadmap for terrorists around the world to simply order from a DNA company and create viruses that could wipe the world out. Anthony Fauci, not surprisingly, was on the side of publishing this. And he said at the time, and this is a quote that should always be associated with Anthony Fauci till the end of time, as he said, even if a pandemic occurs, the knowledge would be worthwhile. Now, in our book, we quote a plethora of scientists who say the knowledge isn't worthwhile, isn't leading to cures, and is really risking and gambling with the future of civilization. There are viruses that they are monkeying around with, that they're mixing together, that have a mortality of 50%. This is the kind of stuff, it shouldn't happen. And even with the best of intentions, there have been over 1,000 leaks from labs in the last decade, over 1,000. And these are even from well-intentioned people in our country. They have mice that escape, they have mice that bite people, they have people who accidentally get infected. So this is very, very dangerous research. And in our book, we uncover that they did not go about the normal process, that Anthony Fauci evaded the process, and the safety committee that was established because of this controversy, Anthony Fauci did an end run around there, and he approved this research without anybody looking at it.
And the amazing thing is that one person, Anthony Fauci particularly, which is why he's on the cover of this book, had so much power. I am not familiar with a bureaucrat in D.C. having as much power and authority and as much resource at their fingertips as Fauci did with something as dangerous as this.
No one probably other than J. Edgar Hoover ever had this much power. Wow. He had the power and he accumulated it over four decades. But after 9/11, in the fear after 9/11, we said, well, maybe we should develop biological weapons, or maybe we should develop the ability to counter biological weapons. So what happened after 9/11 is money poured in by the billions. And Anthony Fauci was in charge of 1/27th of the NIH. But his department grew and grew because he got in charge of all the dual use. Maybe it's civilian, maybe it's military, but billions of dollars flowed into Anthony Fauci's domain. And I think in the end, it turned out that he didn't have the judgment and was not wise enough to have safety protocols and evaded the safety protocols. And so I think without question, he has culpability for this pandemic.
Evaded the safety protocols. That's huge as well. And you also detail in the book, Deception, the Great COVID Cover-Up, how he was really, I mean, ultimately, he was aided. He was covered by this whole network of our intel defense agencies who were very much looking to see if there was anything they could glean from this research.
Yeah. I quote George Carlin in there in his description because he says, you know what? There is no need for conspiracy theories where interests converge. And that's really what went on here. We have eight different agencies in our government that have been funding not just research in Wuhan, but around the world. Hundreds of millions of dollars went into this research. And they said, wow, we would just, you know, and Bill Gates is a big supporter of this. He says, let's identify all of the viruses in the world. And on the surface, that sounds good. If we identify them, then we can combat them. But what if we're taking a virus in a remote part of China, 300 feet under the ground, where it's unlikely to interact with humans? We're digging it out of the ground 300 feet, bringing it to the surface, then taking it to a city 8 hours away, Wuhan, with 15 million people. Is there a danger that just by retrieving the virus, not even doing anything to it, but by retrieving it and taking it to a metropolitan area, that it could leak? That's one danger. But it's worse than that. When they say identify, they identify the virus, but then they say, what if we mix it with this other virus? So they're finding unknown viruses deep in a bat cave, driving 8 hours away to a metropolitan area. Then they're merging it and mixing it to see what happens if they mix it with another virus. And really, I think it's a death wish. It's something that is a disaster waiting to happen. And this has happened many, many times already. It's documented many times that this has leaked. Even COVID, since it's been discovered and found in lab, has leaked again from labs and infected people from the lab. So this is a huge man-made disaster, and it showed incredibly poor judgment to think that a totalitarian society would be honest with us in what they were doing and help us. What they did is they hid it from us. And so as this thing rampaged, the Chinese were saying, and we document this in Deception, for a month they were saying there was no human-to-human transmission when they knew damn well this thing was spreading like wildfire throughout Wuhan.
And that's the thing, talking with Senator Rand Paul, the cover-up. I mean, he was very, in the beginning, he was quite successful with this cover-up. I mean, I just remember when we were on air and watching, we had a whole segment talking about how he, all this merchandise was coming, like he was on t-shirts and there were Fauci keychains, and it started to seem a little off, especially, you know, as we saw how quickly everything was spreading and then some other things, there were some other red flags there. He was very successful in covering all of this up in the beginning. But now that where are all of the people that were lionizing him? They don't seem to condemn him, but they don't seem to pay this any more attention either. So what will the consequences be? Because something like this is too dangerous. I mean, obviously you agree because you wrote this book, to leave as is.
What caught my interest and really got me intrigued in the double nature of Anthony Fauci was his emails that were exposed by a federal judge January 31st and February 1st of 2020. So you have an email chain that starts at 10:30 at night and goes till 3 in the morning. You can actually sense the fevered pitch. You can sense his fear because he's going, oh my gosh, this came from research I funded and I didn't obey the rules. And he's emailing till 3 in the morning. The last email at 3 in the morning is to someone named Bob Cadillac. When I saw that, I didn't know who Bob Cadillac was. But I discovered after I met Bob Cadillac that he was in charge of the safety committee that should have reviewed this research. And he didn't, not because it was his fault, but because Anthony Fauci evaded the scrutiny. So when he's emailing Bob Cadillac at 3 in the morning, he's saying, nothing to see here. Looks like it came from animals. It was a not so subtle suggestion that stay out of this, even though we didn't actually review this the way we should have. It looks like it didn't come from the lab. Nothing to see here. But this is his modus operandi from the very beginning. Is he was saying one thing in private, and all of his lieutenants, all of these virologists are saying the same thing. Wow, it looks manipulated, and we know they're doing gain of function. Anthony Fauci, in his own words, was saying in 2020, we know they're doing gain of function research in Wuhan, and the virus looks manipulated, and we're very worried about this. A year later, in committee, after having been sworn in to tell the truth, he tells me to my face, the NIH has never, ever, unequivocally, never funded gain-of-function research in Wuhan. In private, he's saying the opposite, and really, frankly, does deserve to go to jail for it. I mean, it's a lie. It's a felony to lie to Congress, and he should be prosecuted for it. But if we never get him, we should at least get to the truth, because this research is ongoing, and we do it in about 12 different centers in the United States. And we've got to put a stop to this, because we're risking the future of our country. We're risking the future of civilization as population as we know it, because of the dangerousness of these viruses that are being created.
Exactly. Well, this book is a must read. It's a must get. Deception, the Great COVID Cover Up. I mean, it is the most exhaustive account of all of this that's ever been written. Senator Rand Paul, thank you for writing this book.
Follow Dana on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts, because knowledge is your ultimate superpower.
The Democratic convention's in Chicago next year. Are you confident that your city and your state are going to have a better grasp on it by this time?
I am confident that we can handle it, but again, it will require help from the federal government, and someone needs to work in Texas with these border politicians to have them stop sending people only to blue cities and blue states.
No, that's not Texas, J.B. Pritzker. That's the federal policy. And you know what? Unless we get a handle on what's happening at the southern border, there is no guarantee that what we saw in Israel doesn't happen here with terrorists coming across the border. Hell, they're probably, in fact, I'm sure they are here. I mean, that's the smart thing to assume. More on that this week. Today in Stupidity Came.
All right. This will be cut six, by the way, one. This is Al Sharpton. He's talking about, sure, you have militants in the civil rights movement and everything, but we didn't go around holding hostages or anything. Listen to this.
Human life. Those people that are being held hostage have nothing to do with the policies, whether you agree or not, of Netanyahu. Okay. I don't agree with everything Netanyahu does. We're talking about human life.
Yeah. Anyway, it's Al Sharpton. Wow. So,
folks,
enough said.
Sign up for Substack, chapter and verse. Follow us on Facebook, YouTube, like, and subscribe. Back tomorrow.